Well, tell us about him.
In my younger days, we had a character who grew up tall and angling, probably 6 foot tall, never had a great deal of education. He grew up about like Topsy in Uncle Tom's Cabin. He just grew. But he was a nice character. He'd always get off some very rude sayings and like that. But he had an uncle in Delphi. And he went up to work up there one time, and he and his uncle's name was Smith. And they both got a little bit too much of that mountain dew up there. But as a result, the Joker got in jail. Delphi jail. And when he came back down to West Coast, he sang this song, which he claimed he composed himself. As I was going down the road with a tired feeling and a heavy load, out come a sheriff and he hollered out bail. Happy up the Delphi jail, rock no force, he gave me tea, sour molasses to make it sweet, poured my coffee in a rusty old pail, and that's the way to use me. I jail. Now I am free out of that door, and I hope the Lord I will bear no more. For the birds am a flying without their tail. Sure, well, I jail. you know that happened to the Royal Fowl. That didn't exactly a fool, so funny catch it. My daddy bought me a little cake for Christmas present. Once I picked me a little apple cake because both of us was wrong. She didn't seem to make much sense, but she was up somehow. But when it comes to making, she's an educated cow. Betsy the heifer, queen of all the cows. She gives more milk than any law allows. In the morning she gives pasteurized, in the evening she gives homogenized. Betsy the heifer, queen of all the cows. On the county fair to try and win a prize. She knew what was going on. I could see it in her eyes. She got so excited, she tried so hard to please. Then when I went to milk her, I got her cottage cheese. Betsy the heifer, queen of all the cows, she gives more milk than any lord allows. In the morning she gives homogenized, in the evening she gives pasteurized. Betsy the heifer, queen of all the cows. I planted me a tater patch, try and raise some dough. Vacation with some city folks I know, but no one would milk my cow, no matter how I banged. So Dan took my vacation and left me to hold the bag. Now everybody, Betsy the heifer, queen of all the cows, she gives more milk than any lot. In the morning she gives a marginalized, in the evening she gives a marginalized. Betsy the heifer,
he has a real museum in his house.
He tore off his boots, and he put one front foot in the crotch of that and pull the boot jack of the other, and he'd pull his boot up. All right. Now one more guess. Now let me think that is. Somebody.
I know.
What is it?
Well, when you want to take a cow out to milk it, you put that over its head.
Well, now you come pretty close to it.
It's getting warm.
You're getting warm, Alabama. What's that?
Oh, I know what it is. When the milk comes out, you put it on the head.
Well, you're getting out. Now, what'd you want to say, little girl? Not exactly. Now I'll tell you, I don't have to guess any longer. That's called a horse. Now that was very small, and that's especially for a colt. You know what a colt is? Young horse? Baby horse. Well, 100 years ago, they didn't have too many fences. Not like they do nowadays. No wire, woven wire fences and such things as that. So, when they left the old mare and her colt out to run around in the brush lots and like that, they took this apart and put this one over the colt's head and a log in which I have home over the old mare's head. So of course, when you go around and they come to a fence like that, well, you see that would drag and catch in the fence. So they couldn't get out the pasture lot. Now that's the horse folk. And I showed it to a lot of people, and there's darn few of them could guess that was actually right.
And there also was a cowboy.
And I got that.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So I gave one of these to the woodland, to the music.
I don't
know. All right. You can pass it around as you want.
It's a joke.
How do you know what that is?
Yeah,
but what did the yoke come up in? What was used for?
You put one ox in there.
Well, no, that's fine. But the cocks these were for calves when they started to break in a pair of calves when they would later grow up to be oxen. They would know that it meant to. You hear that expression about tear carrying the yoke. And all that. Cereal. And God knows how old. It didn't go to some of Jim's relics, but I could guess it's anywhere between 100 and 150 years old. And when you said have a pair of calves, if they wanted to break them for steers, they put them out in the barnyard and they hook them up together. And so they get used to traveling around, get used to carrying the yoke. So it was easier as they grew older. You had bigger yokes, so they got some real work oxen. Home, I have about 12 or 15 yokes of various sizes, and some of them are very old. And as I tell Mr. Shooter, you'll stop up and say hello in the morning, I'll show you all my yokes. It'll take 2 hours if I showed you everything you got. Very briefly refer to God. I have home and one of my prize guns, a flintlock rifle. It's an English gun maker's version of a Kentucky rifle. Many of you kids have heard about the famous Kentucky rifles used in the Revolutionary War. Well, this is built very much on that model, only it's an Englishman's gun maker's version of it, instead of Kentucky or Lancaster rifle. And I have a number of pistols and various guns of various vintages and so forth. And I have the remains. I have a barrel that was known as a brass rifle. And Jim tells me he never saw one with a brass barrel. And very unfortunately, the young fellow lived with when I was a kid, and he took it out one Christmas day. And him and some other fellows, they got celebrating too much. They had a little too much hard cider, which is available up along the mountain there. Both the old guns were having loaded up. I had that gun today. I haven't got too much of this world's good. I wouldn't take $500. So?
Well?
Oh, that might take one more song.
One more song, huh?
All right. It's a song that my dad used to sing. Let me have a... I think I got to, in case I stumbled, fell down. They see, now, you children, when you get... If you don't grow old. It's the first thing you can do. You might have to have a couple pairs of glasses. I have one pair when I want to see you off to shoot at a grace for or drive my car. And this is for short range work. Under 50 yards, right? Not like as far as you're in front. Well, this is for... Well, this isn't for... All right. And there they sat a popping. John Stiles and Susan Cutter. John Stiles as strong as any ox, and Susan fat as butter. Then she John Stiles in 12 o'clock. I'm dying of digestion. Instead of all this popping corn, why don't you pop the question? He got his arm around her waist. He said, honey, will you marry? She said, John Stiles, you know I will. Why did you so long tarry? They're married now for many a year. Their kids populate the hollow. But John, he never says a word for fear of what might follow. And there they sat a popping corn, John Stiles and Susan Cutter. John Stiles as strong as any ox, and Susan fat as butter. Now, I don't tend to go out through all of these, but most of you kids know about putting on the agony, putting on style, don't you? All right. I'll just sing a couple verses of it, and you join me on the chorus. Man on a highway, driving like he's mad, with a pair of horses, with a brand new auto that he borrowed from his dad. Blows his horn so loudly, just to make his lady smile. But she knows he's only putting on the style, putting on the agony, putting on the style. But what all the young folks are doing all the while, and if you look around, you're pretty apt to smile. See so many people are putting on the style. I guess that doesn't
matter. Isn't that wonderful?
Walls of this building dates back to
before the Civil War, or at least 100 years ago, since this is 1965. Well, then let's ask you to turn on your imagination right now and pretend that you are part of the family, but move right here to settle. Sometime after the Revolutionary War, the year 1789 was the first year that settlers actually built shelters and scratched out a farm. They had bought their land from Judge William Cooper. And when they came here, there were no open spaces such as we now see between us and the lake. Everywhere they looked, there were trees. So their policy had to be the opposite of conservation. Get rid of those trees was the first thing to do. And so the axe was a symbol of the first tool they had to put their hands on. And everything they made was cheating of wood. Take a look at the plow we're nearest to. It's been well used, and every piece of it, except the very tip of the coulter down here that cuts the dirt, and this little bolt here is made of wood. It's made of wood. The bolt is made of metal, but everything else in the plow is made of wood. And the farmers were very inventive in how they used wood. After the plow comes the drag, and that's what this is. It's pulled over the soil to break up those clods, smaller lumps. Now, in this particular one, you see metal points made by a blacksmith, but we'll see one up here in which even the points of drag are made of wood. And the farmer lashed them with twine to make them stay on that eighth frame. Let's look for a minute at some of the other tools. When you see a long shaft like that on a cart, does anyone know what that would mean? Pulled by oxen, not horses, and there were several reasons why oxen were better than horses for your family as pioneers. One was that it was cheaper. You had to have a dairy cow in order to drink milk, and you had to bring your own cow with you. And that cow would have a calf every spring. Your father took care of mating her. And once in a while, she'd have twin calves. And if those twin calves were both boys, both bull calves, your father would have the calves operated on to make them grow up to be oxen, gentle, plastic rather than wild bulls. There was the start of a team of oxen. Then if you were a boy in that family, every morning your father would have you take those little baby oxen out and make a little yoke for them and walk them around your farmyard and teach them the commands which he used on his grown-up oxen. All oxen are called by the same two names, the left one buck and the right-hand one right. This long calf goes right up between the two animals, and you would drive from the left side of the team so that these girls over here are standing where the driver would be if he were driving a team of oxen. You'll hear the commands later. I'll just say now that when he wants them to turn left, he says, gee, no, haw. And when he wants them to turn right, he says, gee, or gee. When he wants them to stop, he says, what? And he can also make them back by using that word. Oxen have no bit or harness. They're ruled entirely by word of mouth and a little reminder, a little enforcement from the whip. The handler of oxen doesn't whip these animals to punish them or to speed them up. You can't hurry them. He does this to reinforce his command. Another advantage of oxen over horses was they were cheaper in what you fed them. If you had a horse, you had to grow oats. But oxen would eat the grass just as the cow does. When you cleared your farm, chopping down trees, sometimes brush would begin to grow up on those stumps. You would turn your cow and your oxen in there, and they would keep that brush from growing up. This would form their food and also keep your land cleared. A third advantage was that you could make your own yoke, and here is one. Boys, if you looked at it, you could feed it if you had to. With an axe or hatchet and a knife and a tub of water for shaping, you could make everything except that iron loop, which the blacks. It would take a lot of skill and a lot of tan and leather to make a harness for a horse. Let's look at some of the other tools. You call out the name as you recognize it.
Yes.
Sickle. And hanging up here looks different from what we buy in stores. You can see the blacksmith's hammer marks. And the shine you see on all tools in the Farmer's Museum doesn't come from sandpaper or shellac. That's just use. Every tool you see has been used and used till it's worn shiny.
Scythe.
Scythe. And this is an improvement on a scythe, a big improvement when that was invented. It's called a cradle. It's simply a framework of shaped roots. As your father chopped the trees to clear his land, he saw a tree with good curving roots and said, those would be good fingers for my cradle. The advantage is that when you used your scythe to cut your grain, you could lay down a cradle full at once. It was as if a pair of arms came along with the scythe. And as you laid down a cradle full and took a step and cut another scythe load and laid down that other cradle full, a binder coming along behind you, your wife or your oldest son, could quickly bind up that bundle of grain. It was a much faster operation. And if the scythe alone were used and the grain fell helter-skelter in a good way. Some of the tools were really beautiful that farmers made. They had a graceful tool, a pitchfork made from one branch with just a wedge of wood driven in. An all-purpose shovel. If you used it for shoveling grain into your grain bin in the barn, you could also use it for shoveling manure out of the barn if you cleaned it up well enough. You didn't have time to make very many shovels, so you used one for many purposes. This is a flail. It's nothing but a handle and a heavy bar. The two are held together with an eel skin, which is the strongest fiber you could use. A flail is the simplest way to thresh grain. You just lay the grain out on a hard, packed dirt floor or a wooden floor if you have that in your barn and hit it again and again with a flail. And when the hulls are broken loose from the grain itself, you pick it up, the grain, put it in the basket, and on a windy day, hold it up in the air and shake it and hope that the wind will carry away the hulls and the grain be left in the basket. That's the process of threshing. Your cart would more likely have two wheels than four for general all-purpose farm work as a pioneer. Partly because your land has just been cleared. There are no real roads. And there's lots of big boulders and stumps and obstructions. And those two wheels can get around the stumps and stones better than four wheels could. There's another advantage of oxen. They can pick their way around better than a horse. And they don't get excited and hurt themselves against obstacles the way a horse might. The ox can pull heavier loads. He has more weight and strength to use in jerking those stumps out of the soil than a horse could. Against the wall, you see handmade rake, a little yoke for the dairy cow, so you can tell where she's wandered as she looks for grass to eat. And over in the corner is hanging a trap. So I'll remember to tell you how hungry you were that first winter. Everything you brought with you in your cart's wagon, even settlers, had to be in that way. At least not very likely to store. Very close to you. So you trapped whatever animals you could, and you were pretty hungry by the time next June came. If you came in the summer and cleared enough land to plant one crop, it probably was winter wheat you put in the fall. That would be harvestable next June. Let's turn in the other direction.
Excuse me, is that the piece in the center, is that a poke?
The one in between the two?
Yes.
A poke? I don't know, sir. I can't answer.
Because
that question,
we talked to an old man in the Catskills last night, and it looks like the poke that he showed us.
We've heard of the pig in a poke. Yes. Tell me what a poke is. Well, it's some of the head across the stem. There's a little hook on the end, and that'll catch on brush, I suppose. I don't know. So you would put a poke on an animal other than that.
This probably was for a cow or a horse.
For a horse. I say you.
They still use them to keep cattle from climbing through or over fence. Only today they're made of metal.
How can I ask you once more to stand about even with that wild fleet, he said you could sell them coming 15 feet away. They'd feed so many of his needs. He found that one thing they could gather and sell was maple sugar. time is sunny and warm, but the nights are cold. It's chilly in the month of March. Some in February, all of March, and a little bit of April. A farmer would drill a maple tree, put in a metal wooden spout, and fasten there a sap bucket. Buckets are made by the cooper. The cooper is the craftsman who makes boxes, barrels, kegs, firkins, tubs, and syrup buckets by the hundred. And these will be hung on every maple tree on your property. And then you children, perhaps, would be the one to get sap. You've got to gather more than once a day. And well, when you catch your fire going in your own yard and boil down that syrup, it takes between 25 and 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. Well, then you might walk with a big brother to pull this and this large barrel through the woods. You might walk through a tree and empty the sap that has been gathered in that bucket into these and off to another tree and get more sap. Come back to your center barrel and brother's point through the woods, pour these in, and then go off to the tree and keep gathering sap. You can do that all day if you live in every one of the maple trees. A whole carload of maple sugar in the settlement for these early pioneers and was able to sell them in return some food to help them. Maple sugar and syrup then were your chief sweeteners at home. When your mother made a cake or cookies or some kind of a treat for you, she was more likely to use maple syrup or honey than sugar because she was not near a store and where the sugar was expensive. It came in a great big hard dome. We'd see it in our store. She'd have to take home that dome and pound it and chop it and then sift it. So sugar wasn't used. The straw beehive that you see there wasn't nearly as common as a hollow log for keeping bees. Down below the straw, you just see a section of hollow log. And that was the way farmers kept bees. They would perhaps only go to the woods where there were bees and would move them then. Making sure that the bees had a new skip, a new bee gum to live in. They would keep the one that they had found for more honey. Here's something interesting that I learned about this. The Indians did not have honeybees. Honeybees were brought from Europe into the world. They seemed to move westward with civilization. To reach California, in other words, for a good many years after they were seen in New York and Massachusetts. Let's move back to the
glad you don't have to wash dishes like that. They have to be
suds, but afterwards scalded with boiling water. Here's something you boys might have made. Your mother to stir the stew. The stew was much more common than hamburgers or hot dogs or even steak. Stew was the way she fed her family. Here is a paper that you made with a gourd and a plain wooden handle shaped. You know what this is? Rolling pin. Here's ingenious something made out of a branch. Yes, an egg beater like this. A little later on, they had luxuries like this. It's a lemon squeezer. There's something really long-winded to make. A sieve made of woven horsehair sewed into a wooden frame. The blacksmith was the one essential craftsman to be near, and you'll find many things that he made. You had a fire going on the hearth at your house every day, all day, winter and summer. At night you just banked it over with dead ashes to keep it glowing through the night hours, and in the morning you put it out. If by chance a rainstorm is put out, here is a fire period, and Mother would send you to the nearest neighbor to bring back some live coals and rekindle your fire. That's hammered out by a blacksmith.
How tiny that handle is.
A different kind of fire carrier is this one up here, which I think is almost present by the fancy look of it. It's lined with tin. It's meant for putting into your weapon or into your sleigh when your family travels winter weather. You put your feet on this and bear skin or buffalo skin robe over there and find everybody else's feet there with yours. Painted what they call pumpkin red, and in shops all your life, you'll see many things that color. It was a homemade paint of linseed oil, buttermilk, white of egg, and red ochre for the coloring. There are two words which I think you're going to remember about early pioneer farmers. One is hardworking, and the other is inventive. And here's an invention. It's very clever, a cherry picker. Cherry in here, bring this little back to knock the cherry pit out. While you take out the pitted cherry, put in a fresh one, and so on. You see, this would be a friend's job. You and a pal could do an awful lot of cherries in a half an hour. Now, here's a four-person job. If you had been on your farm for 4 or 5 years, and had a chance, you might plant some apple trees. When your orchard was producing, there's an apple peeler. One child spears the apple on this fork, and the littlest boy or girl could turn the handle round and round while the apple revolves. You might be the one that held this blade and pulled the skin off that apple as fast as possible. While you did that, another sister or brother was sitting right next to you with this gadget. You recognize that?
Yes.
He comes down on the apple and takes out the core and cuts it into 8 sections. Like this. And big sister then, right next to you, has a needle and a thread, and she would string those sections of apple. Now you'll see apple sections hanging to dry down in the farmhouse of the Farmer's Museum, also at the store, because this is something you could barter and trade at the store and get other things for. I've seen dried apple tastes delicious, especially in the first year. Some of those you see at our store have been hanging there for 10 years, and I wouldn't advise eating those. Oh, let me show you our flashlight first. A pine knot you may have read of in a story. It's nothing but a chunk of a tree where the branch once came out. And you would have soaked this in waste fat. What was left in the pan after a roasted meat had been done? So it was soaked with grease. Then you could carry it through the night to tend your soup or to go eel fishing. Or in the house, if you just had to do something at night, you could put a spike in the end of that and jam it into the masonry of your fireplace or into the log wall of your cabin and have it in your land. It smoke and it smell, but it's good light. I think you recognize the oops. You recognize me?
Yes.
Look for a large bellows when you get to the blacksmith shop. You recognize candles. This is what's left of a rushlight, which was more common than candles for just family use during the winter months. You children would have been sent out to gather rushes in the marsh. This kind of a rush grows close to cattails in the same sort of swampy land, and when you brought them home to peel them, cut them into planks about 8 inches long, soaked them in grease. They could then be put into the jaws of such a holder as this, and worked for about a half an hour. It was more time and trouble for mother to make candles, and they were more expensive if she had to buy them, so she more commonly used the rest.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Rain, how much order to be on the side? Oh, I got two outside checking to get in here. I just want to order.
Let me go right around the corner now.
Okay.
Let's see.
Wielder, the man with the hat.
half. So he would come up with four quarter long. That's a split rail. And let's see which one of you today will first notice the split rail fence. When you see it, will you say, there's the split rail fence out good and loud? Save them for next year's crop. You have flax seed pods. And inside them are the little brown flax seeds. This is good for next year's crop, but also for new oil, which is an oil still used in wet house paint for outdoor paint. Also, they used it for medicinal purposes. A hot, wet band of oil flax seeds is good for infection and cuts. Get those seeds off of the stalk, he used a rippling comb. He pulled the stalk right through here and the seed pods would drop off. All right, now pretend that perhaps father's come up from the field for dinner and dinner isn't ready. Mother says, oh, that cornbread won't be ready for 10 more minutes. You hear the stalk from the woodshed. Thank you. Tinder to start up your fire in the morning. I've been banged down all night. You can see how dry and stuff would be when we're starting the fire. Why we call sharp remarks heckling, because we're going to pull the flax fibers through the heckles. As soon as they'll go through the coarse ones, we go on to finer ones. What's being left behind is the toe fibers. The toe is a rope made of those coarse toe fibers, and the boys and men learned how to spin toe fibers also into toe thread or toe yarn. That's a toe spinning wheel you see over there, that odd little small one. That would have been used by the boys and the men to spin a coarse cloth that would have been used for their grain sacks or their mattress covers or any coarse rug to put on the floor.
Could I interject something there? In the South, the slaves were given, of course, the poorest materials, and they were given shirts of this very coarse material. And Frederick Douglass, in his account of his life, I've seen accounts of how this is so rough and uncomfortable when they first began to wear those toe shirts.
Makes me think of Stephen Foster's song about Sam Town races. I bet my money on Bobby Mag do that.